Life is unpredictable, but preparing for the unexpected shouldn't be. Take ownership of your life planning with Policy Genius to help your loved ones have a financial safety net in case something happens to you. They offer life insurance policies starting at just $276 a year for $1 million in coverage. Don't wait for life to make other plans. Protect your family today. Head to PolicyGenius.com. That's PolicyGenius.com.
It's just the normal noises in here.
This is Polyphonic Press, the podcast where two music fans pick a classic album completely at random. Using the patented random album generator, they are given an album to review from a curated list of over 1,000 classic releases, spanning multiple genres. And now onto the show. Here are your hosts, Jeremy Boyd and John Van Dyke.
All right, hey, welcome to Polyphonic Press. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
And I'm John Van Dyke.
And let's not waste any time. We've got the patented random album generator right in front of us here. So let's hit the button and see what album we're going to be listening to this week. And the album we're going to be listening to is...
The album you will be reviewing is Low by David Bowie.
Oh, cool.
Okay, so here is a description of the album. It says, Low is David Bowie's groundbreaking 11th studio album and the first installment in his celebrated Berlin trilogy. Produced in collaboration with Brian Eno and Tony Visconti, marking a radical departure from its previous glam rock sound, Low is split into two distinct halves. The first side features fragmented experimental art rock and electronic pop songs, while the second side dives into haunting ambient instrumentals. Recorded in the wake of personal turmoil and relocation to West Berlin, the album reflects themes of alienation, dislocation, and emotional numbness. Tracks like Sound and Vision and Be My Wife showcase Bowie's minimalist lyrical approach, while the side B's atmospheric compositions, such as Warsaw, evoke a post-war European desolation. Initially polarizing, Low is now widely regarded as one of Bowie's most influential and visionary works, paving the way for post-punk, new wave, and ambient music. Okay, so yeah, so this album was released on the 14th of January, 1977, and the genres are art rock, avant-pop, electronic, ambient, and experimental rock, and it was released on RCA Records and produced by David Bowie and Tony Visconti. Hang on. The album is, there are 11 songs on the album. The first side features the... I got what do you call more conventional songs. So side one has 7 songs on it, and side two is the instrumental songs that were written by David Bowie and Brian Eno. So that's how the album is split up. So if you're listening along, which we do encourage you to do, the album starts with the song Speed of Light. The first side ends with the 7th track, which is A New Career in a New Town. What we do is we pause halfway through and discuss the album at the halfway point, or rather after side one. And just want to remind you to check out our Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/polyphonicpress, and you can get lots of cool stuff there. Like you can get these episodes the day before they go live, and you can request an album for us to review, and you can join the chat and a whole bunch of things that are there. But without further ado, okay, here is the first song on the album, Speed of Life. So here we go. Okay, and ending side one with A New Career in a New Town. Yeah, this is really weird.
Yeah, it is. but I'm kind of digging it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not what I was expecting from David Bowie. I knew of this album, but I never heard it.
Yeah, me too.
I was more familiar with his, I guess, the glam period, like the Ziggy Stardust period, but I knew a lot of his hits throughout his whole career. But this album, I had heard about his Berlin period, but I never really knew a whole lot about it. And I didn't know really anything about this album, but it is very weird. It's very experimental.
It's got Brian Eno all over it.
Well, we haven't even gotten to the Brian Eno stuff. That's the crazy thing.
He's still in this stuff too. It's almost like it reminds me a lot of like Gary Numan stuff in a lot of ways. But there's still that glam rock spark in it somewhere. It's sort of like a cross between them.
And it came out in 1977, and I don't know if it's because, you know, they were in Berlin and they were in a totally different country. It doesn't sound like 1977. But it doesn't sound like anything from the past, or it doesn't sound like anything later either. It's its own thing.
Well, it almost sounds like glam, but like I said, there's like the synths in it sort of bring it into like other sort of a spacey sort of thing. And it sort of makes it a little more timeless sounding. Yeah, it's very, I don't know what the word is. It's interesting.
It really is. One of the things that I like about it is that they've created their own sound, and they've sort of stuck to the sound for the whole album. It's sort of like there's this weird effect on the drums that make it almost sound like a Star Wars laser or something.
Yeah.
I don't know what effect is on it. It's like a really short, some sort of modulation. I can't quite put my finger on it, but not just that. It's the way the songs are structured is very unique, and I think one of the things that I like about it is I don't know where it's going, and sometimes, you know, listening to like good rock and roll is great, but a lot of the time you know what you're going to get. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. But with this, it's sort of like, okay, I don't know what's going to happen next here. Like, and it's sort of keeping me on my toes.
Yeah, the song structures were very, almost like disjointed, but not in a bad way. I don't know. The description is this. Descriptive words are not coming to me at the moment, but it's just interesting.
Yeah, I know. It's hard. It's really hard to put into words of what is going on here. It's sort of like, and it's hard to analyze too, because it's like, well, yeah, the production is something that's totally, I wouldn't say, well, here's the thing. It is avant-garde in the sense that it doesn't follow like conventional pop structures, but it's also not so way out there that it's unlistenable. Like you can still enjoy it when you're listening to it. It's not like it's not so experimental that it's like an art thing where the point is to push the boundaries of what music is. This is obviously still clearly music and still quote unquote pop music, but it's on the very edge of what you could call pop music. And that's what's so interesting about it, is it's sort of like stretching the balloon, and they're inside the balloon and stretching it to see, well, just right to the edge of where it's going to pop.
That's a big balloon.
That's a big balloon, yeah.
But, yeah, it's, like we said, it's very spacey in a lot of ways, and a little disjointed, but yeah, it's still somewhat cohesive. Yeah, I don't know what else to say about it. It's I was a little bit surprised when it first came on. I'm like, okay, this is interesting. And then, you know, as we're getting into it, it's still funky.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
There's nothing really quite like it. Like I said, like Gary Numan sort of was obviously influenced by this.
Yeah.
And sort of went in this direction a little bit. But again, it was a little different yet again. It's him. But this is pretty unique. I don't think there's really anything quite like it.
Yeah.
Except maybe the other Berlin albums. I don't know.
Yeah, I think Station to Station was one of those was albums.
No, Station to Station was before this one.
Oh, was it? Oh, okay. Yeah, I think this album, I think to me, like I said, I didn't know much about this album. I'd heard of it. And I knew the song Sound and Vision, because I was on some compilation somewhere, but that was really the only thing I knew about it. And I always thought that was odd, because the first like minute and a half, there's no vocals. It's mostly instrumental with a few vocals in the middle and towards the end. But you know, having that as my very, very, very loose barometer for what this album is, even that oddity,
it sounded almost conventional next to what the other stuff going
right.
on.
Right. Well, not even conventional, just like, all the songs have a very similar production, but each song is not like any of the others, if that makes sense.
No, I know. What I meant by is Sound and Vision sort of came on, and to me, as soon as it sort of started up, it sort of took that in-your-faceness of some of the other tracks and sort of reduced it a little bit, because it was clearly supposed to be the pop song, sort of. It wasn't bad or anything like that, but it was still sort of odd. Like, I could see how it would stand out on a compilation, like, what the hell was that? But on this, it sounds like, oh, okay, it fits better here. But it's clearly the you know, quote unquote commercial song for the album, which is still pretty out there.
Yeah, and you know, I always thought the I wonder if this was an influence. That song to me always sounded like Rockpile and Nick Lowe.
Okay. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if there was a little bit of influence in there. I think probably more through Nick Lowe than Dave Edmunds.
Yeah, because the bass playing sounds like his bass playing.
Yeah.
And actually, Nick Lowe, this is kind of funny, he actually released an EP called Bowie with the E left off, because this is Lowe with the E left off. So it was like a response to this album. Which I always thought was pretty funny.
I didn't know that. That's funny.
So yeah, I'm sure that was an influence on shaping the sound of Rockpile. Like, when this album came out, it was not well received at all. Like, it was a commercial flop, and it was also, like, critics didn't really know what to do with it.
I can sort of see that.
You know, I can absolutely see that, because it's like, well, people always had this, I don't want to say that, because David Bowie, yeah, he had gone through a lot of changes, right? Like, he had started out as like a Bob Dylan sort of singer-songwriter type person, and then he did Ziggy Stardust with the glam stuff, and he had the Ziggy Stardust character for a couple of albums, and then he did the Thin White Duke, and then he did almost like a Philadelphia Soul kind of thing with Young Americans, and then this. And so I was going to say, well, people had an idea of who David Bowie was, but not really. But I don't think they were all of those personas that he took on, characters that he made, and the music that he made was still relatively conventional and still quote-unquote commercial. And so when this came out, people didn't really know. It's like they got used to David Bowie sort of being a chameleon, but they didn't really know what to do with this in particular.
And I think that that takes us back to Brian Eno's contribution. Because he's, for a long time, people didn't know what to make of Brian Eno. Because, I mean, he put out, what was it, like 4 or 5 different ambient albums that are meant to be played in like airports or something like that, which I get what he was going at, but apparently they played it in a few airports and stuff like that, and people ate it. They didn't know what to do with it. Just this ambient noise sort of thing. I probably would have thought it was kind of cool, because I get it. Like, I kind of like ambient music and stuff like that, because it creates a mood, and especially when you're like surrounded in, like, I don't know, brutalist architecture or something like that, it's sort of interesting to have music that sort of reflects that.
Yeah.
But obviously, it's not for everybody. It's definitely an artistic statement more than, a practical solution.
Yes, very much so. But I did manage to find a few pretty interesting facts about the album. And this kind of does make sense and sort of gives the album a little more context. It was partly a breakup album with Cocaine. Low was created as Bowie was trying to recover from years of cocaine addiction and mental health struggles during his time in Los Angeles. The fragmented and disjointed structure of the songs mirror his emotional and psychological state during recovery. So that makes sense, you know, if you're struggling with addiction. And I've never been addicted to drugs, but I've heard stories of people of like coming off of and detoxing, and it's painful and physically and mentally draining. And so that the music kind of does reflect that feeling.
Yeah, it's almost like being high, but it's more the withdrawal, I think, is what, and that's where that sort of clanging nature of some of the songs probably comes from. It's a little bit jarring in some ways, but again, it's not unpleasant. It's, I guess it's meant to be somewhat unpleasant, but I don't find it that unpleasant. I think it's actually kind of cool and interesting, and, you know, like many other Bowie fans probably think the same way.
Oh, exactly. And we haven't gotten to it yet, but side B is practically a different genre, and that's where the Brian Eno stuff starts. It's the second half of Low is made up of mostly instrumental ambient tracks, heavily influenced by Brian Eno. He actually wrote some of them, or one of them at least. And this was a bold and unconventional move in 1977, especially for a pop artist, and it helped legitimize ambient music as an art form. And the album was originally rejected by RCA. RCA Records was confused by the album's lack of commercial hooks and its dark avant-garde tone. They initially delayed its release and were skeptical about its potential, but it still went on to become a cult classic. Yeah, and among David Bowie, like hardcore David Bowie fans, this is like one of his, this is the album that they like the most, and it's, it was very influential. And yeah, like I said, Sound and Vision became an accidental hit. Despite being one of the more experimental tracks on the album, Sound and Vision unexpectedly became a top 3 hit in the UK, even though Bowie doesn't start singing until over a minute into the song.
I think it's probably because of its softer edges. It's still a very experimental track, but it was a little bit softer, at least initially.
And it, like you said, it definitely, it inspired generations of artists. Low deeply influenced a wide range of artists, including Joy Division, Radiohead, Nine Inch Nails, and LCD Sound System. Its mix of cold electronic textures and emotional depth helped shape the post-punk and new wave movements. And yeah, like you were saying, like Gary Numan, like Depeche Mode, like all the sort of synth bands that came like in the late 70s, early 80s. This was sort of the proto version of that. So yeah, so those were some interesting facts about the album. But I guess we'll get back into the second side of the album. But before we do that, let's hear from our friends over at the Astroverts podcast. So check those guys out.
What's up, folks? It's Jake here from the Astrovert podcast. Come join us as we play underplayed and undershared bands from across the United States and the world. We found local bands from the Midwest, Florida, the UK, New Zealand, and far, far beyond. Some of our recent favorite discoveries include Sprawl, Glitch Kingdom, City of Auburn, Flake, Michigan, and so many more. We feature rock news.
Rock news! Whoa!
News about rock tracks are getting rocked.
As well as discuss our band's journey toward finishing our forthcoming EP. Our first two singles, Last Call and Tides of Elephants, both out now. You can find the podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We'll now take a few seconds before we begin side two. Thank you. Here's side two.
All right, and ending the album with Subterraneans. Yeah, this is... The second half was totally different from the first half.
Yep.
Still just as weird, but also still just as enjoyable. But in a totally different way.
It's almost like, some tracks were almost like classical in some ways.
Yeah.
Just synthier. Some tracks remind me of Soviet Wave.
Yeah, okay, yeah, I can see that. Well, I mean, this was Berlin in the 1970s, so that's almost... Well, they didn't go to East Berlin, but, you know, it's... Pretty,
no, not necessarily.
Pretty close to Eastern Europe, you know.
One song's called Warzawa, so. But it just, I don't know, there's something about that ambient thing. It just puts you in another sort of headspace, and it can be quite relaxing. And
yeah, I was just going to say, I feel very relaxed right now. I think that's the point of ambient music, is to sort of be this calm, sort of meditative sort of thing. And it's not really something that you put on. Well, you can, but it's the point is it's not really an active listening sort of thing. It's background music in a good way. It's like you can sort of meditate to it, or you can just put it on to relax to.
It just sort of creates a mood.
Yeah, exactly. And it's weird that, like, it's great, but it's weird that it was that they decided to do that all of that on half of this album.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can understand the record company rejecting the album initially, because, like, what do you do with this? And I understand that to a certain point. It's like you want to trust your artist. And I think, you know, in the 70s, RCA was sort of that. There were more of an artist-friendly label. But at the same time, they still they're still investing in printing the album and getting it pressed and everything like that. So they have to be able to sell a certain amount of units to be able to make up for the cost of making them, of manufacturing them. So, yeah, I can see both sides of it. I can see David Bowie saying, well, you know, this is my album, this is the statement that I want to make and at this, you know, particular point in my career. And I think obviously this album has gone on to become an iconic album and influential on a lot of artists.
Eventually they picked it up. So it's good that they decided to take a chance on it.
And you know, I can see, like, cause upon initially listening to it, like, especially in the 70s and especially given David Bowie's track record of putting out, you know, pretty big selling albums. And then all of a sudden he gives them this, where half of it is instrumental ambient tracks and the other half is like experimental avant-garde, very short pop songs. The record company is sort of, I can see them saying, okay, well, what songs can we put out as singles to promote this thing?
I don't hear a single.
So, but yeah, like you said, I'm glad that they did take a chance on it. And even though it wasn't initially a big seller, I mean, that's sometimes you just got to take a chance like that. The other thing I wanted to mention too, like we mentioned, it was briefly mentioned, is the reason that he left to go to Berlin was to kick his drug habit for cocaine. And somebody that actually played a big role in this album and traveled with him was Iggy Pop. They sort of wanted to get clean together. And so he moved to Berlin with Bowie, and they were really close friends. He sang backup vocals on What in the World. But
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think they wrote quite a bit of stuff together. I think he recorded some stuff in Berlin as well. Yeah, so yeah, his album Lust for Life was recorded, which is his second solo album after he left the Stooges, and David Bowie played on that. So it's interesting that Iggy Pop had his first solo breakout pop hit at the same time that David Bowie was going through his experimental. But yeah, Iggy Pop played a big role in encouraging both of them to get clean and sober, and I'm glad that they did.
Yeah, me too.
Although I think Iggy Pop kind of relapsed there. This album overall, I did enjoy it. I enjoyed it in a way that sort of, I guess I wasn't expecting to. Because usually, I don't reject unconventional music, and I could easily see myself not enjoying
ignoring it.
Yeah, exactly. But I did enjoy it, and I enjoyed I embraced the weirdness and enjoyed that. And I think this is just a kind of a really cool sort of little gem in David Bowie's, in his discography.
Yeah, I kind of want to hear the other Berlin albums as well.
Yeah, I think the next one is Heroes.
Okay.
I think those were the two. And yeah, you're right. Station to Station was... But yeah, I guess that sort of brings us to the end. So what would be your three highlights on the album?
Geez. I kind of liked... I liked how the album started out. I thought it was really interesting. It sort of caught me off guard. So I think I'm going to go with Speed of Life and Breaking Glass. And then I liked Warzawa.
Yeah. Yeah, those were really good. I think I would probably go, yeah, Speed of Life. I think I like Always Crashing in the Same Car.
Yeah, I like that one too. I was considering that one.
Yeah, and... I think I like the closing track, Subterraneans.
That was a good one, too. I like that.
Sort of a interesting mix. So, yeah, I guess that brings us to the question is, would you listen to this album again?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think I would, too. Yeah, it's not something that I typically listen to, but I definitely... I think doing this podcast has sort of broadened my taste, and it's definitely, I think I would definitely listen to this again.
Yeah, it's sort of the same thing, but I mean, it sort of fits into what I've been listening to on the pop side and a little bit onto the experimental side, so it sort of straddles that line, and I'm all for it, so.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So yeah, so I guess we'll end the episode there. Thank you so much for listening if you made it this far. We would love to hear from you. If you go to the website polyphonicpress.com, where you can get lots of updates and listen to all the past episodes, and all, you can get in contact with us. If you want to go to the contact page, just go to polyphonicpress.com/contact, or just in the top menu, go to the contact page and drop us a line, and we would love to hear from you and maybe read some of your thoughts on a future episode. And yeah, like I said, be sure to give us a follow if this is your first time listening, and check out the Patreon if you want to help us out. But yeah, I think that just about does it. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
And I'm John Van Dyke.
Take it easy.